السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله أما بعد فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين آج بھی میں
Today also, I will relate some of the accounts narrated by Hazrat Musleh Maud, which sheds light upon various aspects in the life of the promised Messiah, on whom be peace. Further, it illustrates various angles in the life of Hazrat Musleh Maud, may Allah be pleased with him himself. Hazrat Musleh Maud says regarding himself that I should tell you intellectually or academically that I did not accept the promised Messiah simply because he was my father. Rather, when I was 11 years old, I made a firm resolve that if through my research I found the promised Messiah, God forbid, to be false, I would leave my home. However, I understood and comprehended his truthfulness. My faith continuously enhanced to the extent that when the promised Messiah passed away, my faith and conviction only strengthened further. Then Hadhrat Musleh Maud says that when he took the bed by hand, then he was so overwhelmed with emotions and sentiments at the age of 10 years old, which cannot be adequately expressed in words. Regarding how the promised Messiah, alayhi salam, used to encourage and advise to pray and supplicate towards God, even when they were children. In one place, Hadhrat Musleh Maud says regarding this, "The chosen one of Allah the Almighty, the promised Messiah, on whom be peace, to whom Allah the Almighty had said, Ujibu kulla du'aika illa fi shurakaik. This was a promise, that I shall accept all your prayers, but not in the matter of your collaterals." Hadhrat Musleh Maud says, "When the court case of Henry Martin Clark was occurring, I was only 9 years old, yet the promised Messiah requested me for prayers." That is, the promised Messiah, alayhi salam, would ask Hadhrat Musleh Maud for prayers at 9 years old. He would also say to the male and female servants at home to pray for him. So thus, when he, who Allah the Almighty had promised to fulfill all his prayers, had considered it necessary to ask others to supplicate for him. Imagine how important it is for others to give attention towards this. In terms of this revelation that was given to the promised Messiah, that أُجِيبُ كُلَّ دُعَائِكَ إِلَّا فِي شُرُكَائِكَ, some people may not be familiar or know of this. That I shall accept all your prayers but not in the matter of your collaterals. The promised Messiah was praying in context of a court case. It involved some of his close relatives who had taken the matter to court so that they could take a share in the property of his family. The brother of the promised Messiah, the late Mirza Ghulam Qadir Sahib, was fighting in the court on behalf of his family. On the other side, there was a government official who was also related to them. Nonetheless, Mirza Ghulam Qadir firmly believed that the court case would be decided in their favor because the property belonged to them. But when the promised Messiah alayhi salam prayed, he received this revelation, the translation of which is, I shall accept all your prayers but not in the matter of your collaterals. The promised Messiah said thereafter to his family and relatives that do not needlessly waste your money on court cases and lawyers because you will lose. His brother, however, believed that he would win the court case. Finally, the verdict was delivered in the lower court in favor of the promised Messiah's brother. There was then an appeal in a chief court where ultimately they lost the case. So the promised Messiah said, how could this have been possible for you to win this court case? Because Allah the Almighty had clearly said otherwise. Although Hazrat Musleh Maud, in the latter part of this account, has spoken with reference to prayers and supplications, but actually, he was counseling and advising doctors. Here, teams of doctors immediately convene when there are serious or critical matters. In Pakistan and other countries, this is exactly what occurs. However, at times, there are certain doctors who think that they are treating an ill patient, and therefore, only their treatment should be administered, and no other advice or opinion should be ascertained. Hazrat Sarah Begum Sahiba was the wife of Hazrat Musleh Maud, may Allah be pleased with him. She died at childbirth. Regarding this, Hazrat Musleh Maud has said that doctors should have taken consultation. If they had done so in this situation, then perhaps one of the lives could have been saved. This is why Hazrat Musleh Maud has said that if the promised Messiah alayhi salam, who Allah the Almighty had said his prayers would all be accepted and fulfilled, yet he is asking others for prayers. So thus other people within their fields and work, if they need to consult or prayers, then they certainly should act upon this. Hadhrat Musleh Maud says regarding himself, at the house of Dr. Muhammad Hussain Shah Sahib, in the journey where the promised Messiah alayhi salam passed away, once Dr. Mirza Yaqub Beg Sahib came to see the promised Messiah to give him some news about the coming of a Hindu pensioner to meet the promised Messiah. The promised Messiah alayhi salam said at the time that I am also ill. However, Mahmood is also. I am very concerned about his health, so with due attention, treat him. So he forgot about his own illness, and he was aware that his son was going to become the Musleh Maud, the promised son and reformer, and this is why the promised Messiah was concerned. There is a well-known account of the court case regarding a war, which was fought at the time of the promised Messiah. where opponents within his own family and relatives constructed a wall on the path to the mosque and therefore obstructed the route. Regarding this, Hazrat Musleh Maud, may Allah be pleased with him, has narrated the following, that although I was a child, I clearly recall that our own relatives would plant stakes and pegs, so that when guests would come to say their prayers, that in the darkness of the night, they should stumble. This is what occurred, and when the pegs and stakes were uprooted, they began fighting. I similarly remember that the opponents had put up a wall in front of Masjid Mubarak. Some Ahmadis became passionate and emotional and desired to bring down the wall. But the Promised Messiah alayhi salam said, "It is our duty to show patience and to abide by the law." I remember that I was a child and that with the grace of the Almighty Allah, from childhood I would see true dreams. In a dream I saw that the wall is being taken down. People are lifting up one brick at a time and throwing it away. I learned in a dream that sometime before this it has rained. In the same circumstance I saw in a dream that Hazrat Khalifa Masih I is coming from the direction of the mosque. Hazrat Musleh Maud says, when the court verdict came and the wall was taken down, then this is exactly what actually happened. It rained on that day, and after his dars, Hazrat Khalifa Masih I was returning. The wall was being taken down at the time, and I was standing there. Because I had already mentioned this dream to Hazrat Khalifa Masih I, so as soon as he saw me, Hazrat Khalifa Masih I said, "Mia, see, today your dream has been fulfilled." Then Hazrat Musleh Maud, again speaking about this same time period, says, "There was even an era when in the life of the promised Messiah on whom be peace, the opponents had closed or obstructed the door of the mosque. The promised Messiah alayhi salam would arrange for the parda in his home and would often bring people through the mosque. Some people had to take a very long route. This path remained closed for 6 months to a year. Finally, there was a court case, and Allah the Almighty provided such means where ultimately the wall was felled. Now, those who visit Qadian can see that with the grace of the Almighty Allah, very spacious and wide roads and paths have been made." Regarding encouraging children, Hazrat Musleh Maud has said, relating one of his own accounts, "I remember something from childhood. Whenever my mother would become angry, she would say that his head is very small." That is the head of Hazrat Musleh Maud she was referring to. "I remember that the promised Messiah on whom be peace would say that this does not matter. Ratikan, who was a very famous lawyer and whose capability was renowned in the entire nation, also possessed a small head. The promised Messiah says, a large head does not prove or give evidence that one is intelligent. One who deprives his children from education, knowledge and spiritual insight, he may have a large head, yet he will be devoid of wit and intelligence. One who does not possess enough of a mind or intellect to understand what Allah, His Messenger or the Quran actually are, what spiritual insight and knowledge could they possibly ascertain? So the real and actual thing which matters is that we should understand the commands and injunctions of Allah and His Messenger. We should reflect upon them and we should understand the Holy Quran. This is a reality through which the mind can be truly illuminated and enlightened." Regarding loyalty to the government, in one place Hazrat Musleh Maud has said, "When I was a child and starting to understand things, I heard the promised Messiah alayhi salatu wasalam enjoin loyalty to the British government. I remained so firmly resolved on adhering to this loyalty that I would differ with my close friends and even Jamaat leaders. Some people are keen to debate on such matters and they say that as a result of such and such thing, we should not obey the command of the government, except where the government places restrictions on Islamic law, otherwise not." Explaining this elsewhere further, Hadrat Musleh Maud says that the promised Messiah, on whom be peace, said, "The British government are a blessing from God. This does not mean that the people of the British government are very pious and are close to the teachings of Islam. We also have cruel people who are immoral, sinners, performing every manner of vice, bad deeds. So too do we find such people in other nations. There are good people found in the British people as well as amongst other nations. What the blessing is that this government hardly ever interferes into religious matters of individuals. In those matters, it does not interfere. It gives us an opportunity to establish the teachings of Islam. So thus, it is the grace and blessings of Allah. He has chosen such a government for us. This is at a time when the British ruled India, who in individual matters barely interfere." Recently, we had the peace symposium, where a press reporter said the same circumstances are here. I replied to him that in matters of religion, this government does not interfere. This is why it is wrong to say that the circumstances are the same as Pakistan, or the same as those countries where there are prohibitions upon Ahmadis. Nonetheless, Hadhrat Musleh Maud says, "It is possible that if Nazis or fascist people had ruled over us, then in some other matters, they could have been better than the British. It is possible that they would possess more fear of God than these people and would be more just and fair. But they would not be giving such individual freedom as the British have. They may have been good in dealing with people, but in terms of the movement, they may have been opposed. That is, for particular individuals or people, they may have been good or favorable, but as a combined community or Jamaat, they would have been opposed. This would infer, in such a circumstance, that unless an Islamic government was established, the sphere of establishing Islamic teachings for us would be very limited. There would be very few commands of Islam that we would have been able to establish. And in this context, the promised Messiah has called the British government a blessing of God. Now people raise this allegation that the British have planted the Ahmadiyya community themselves. So the promised Messiah has only said these words because the British government gave freedom, and he praised them. The promised Messiah did not mean that they were more just. It is quite possible that in justice and equity, another government may have been better. What is worthy of praise is that the approach, outlook and style of this government is that they have not given the authority to the state to interfere in individual and personal matters of the subjects and citizens. In terms of the jihad of the pen, Hadhrat Musleh Maud has said, "The hearts of prophets are filled with gratefulness. Even on the smallest and trivial matters, they feel a lot of gratitude and thankfulness. When the books of the promised Messiah will be published day and night, then despite the fact that the promised Messiah would not sleep for nights upon nights, yet when somebody would bring the proof to him at night, then as soon as he came, he would himself get up to receive it. That after the scribe came with the published book, he would himself personally go to receive it. He would say alongside, 'Jazakumullah as-sanul jaza.' How much effort he has undertaken, look how much effort they have worn. Allah the Almighty give them the best reward. This is despite the fact that he himself would stay awake at night. Many times, I would fall asleep seeing the promised Messiah working, and if I ever woke up, I would see him still working, and it would continue till morning. Although other people did work for the sake of God, but the promised Messiah alayhi salam would acutely feel their trouble and pain. Why was this? It was because in the hearts of the prophets are great feelings and sentiments of kindness, compassion and mercy for other people." In terms of how the companions of the promised Messiah alayhi salam would be so considerate, mindful and respectful of the etiquettes and status of the promised Messiah, and would be unconcerned for anything else in this manner. Hadhrat Musleh Maud relates one of his accounts. After narrating this, he has drawn attention that our youth should remember that there are Islamic etiquettes and manners which they should give attention towards. Hadhrat Musleh Maud actually says during one of his sermons that I have seen that there is no attention given towards teaching the Islamic youth about Islamic etiquettes. The youth walk around completely informally with their hands around each other's necks. In fact, they feel nothing in doing this in front of me, because they do not even realize that this is something wrong. Their parents and their teachers never gave attention towards their reformation, whereas these things have a very deep impact upon our life. I have seen that some of the tarbiyat I received in childhood from people still has an effect upon me today. When I remember those accounts, then I spontaneously pray and supplicate for them. Once I was standing and leaning with my elbow upon someone else's shoulder, when Master Qadir Bagh Sahib, who was the father of Maulvi Abdul Rahim Dard Sahib, told me off from doing this and said that this was something very bad. At the time, I was 12 or 13 years old or thereabout. But whenever I remember that, I pray from my heart for him. Similarly, there was a Subedar Sahib living from Radabar. I remember an account relating to him. As our mother is from Delhi, and in Delhi and in fact in Lucknow, they address others using the Urdu word Tum, which means you, but it is normally used for elders. Because our mother did not have any other elders to whom we would have to use the Urdu word aap, which also means you, but in a respectful way. Thus, until I was 10 or 11 years old, I would call the promised Messiah using the word tum, which means you, normally used for elders. May Allah the Almighty grant forgiveness to Subedar Sahib and elevate his rank. Subedar Muhammad Ayub Khan Sahib lives in Murabadar. There was a court case in Gurdaspur. During a discussion, I said Tum to promised Messiah alayhi salam. Subedar Sahib took me to the side and said, "You are the son of the promised Messiah, and therefore you have a position of respect. But you should remember that you use the word Tum for someone equal to you, not for elders and respectful people. I cannot tolerate this in any way, shape or form being used for the promised Messiah." So this was the first lesson he gave me regarding this. So thus, we should give particular attention to Islamic etiquette and manners. This is particularly true for the people and youth who appear on MTA. Generally speaking, with the grace of the Almighty Allah, there are very good programs appearing. But there is one particular program produced from Rabwa. In it, there are missionaries and Waqfeen e Zindagis who are sitting. The manner and style of sitting is extremely inappropriate and wrong. They sit on a chair with their legs open whilst moving around and have no cap on their head. Such programs produced from Rabwa can never be tolerated. Thus, from now on, MTA in Pakistan should be mindful of this. The program may be good in terms of its intent and content, but if the presenter or the one conducting the program is inappropriate, it will never be broadcast. This is why I have now stopped this program from being aired again. The missionaries must especially give heed towards this. They have their self-respect, honor and dignity. They should understand that they must uphold this honor and dignity. If an ordinary youth in the world acts in this manner, it would be tolerable. But when a missionary does so, it is intolerable. Some people have written to me and drawn my attention towards this. Everyone is feeling this. That there is a program produced in Rabwa where there is a complete lack of dignity and honor. Hadhrat Musleh Maud relates an account that in childhood we also used to play various sports. I would normally play football. When people came to Qadian who were cricketers, they prepared a cricket team. Hadhrat Musleh Maud said, one day they came to me and said, go and request the promised Messiah alayhi salam to also come. So thus I went in the home, and at the time the promised Messiah was writing a book. When I explained my purpose of coming, he put down his pen and said, your cricket ball will not even reach outside the ground, whereas I am playing the cricket, the ball of which will reach the corners of the earth. Now observe, did the promised Messiah's ball reach the corners of the earth or not? At this time, in America, Holland, England, Switzerland, Middle East, Africa, Indonesia, and in many other countries, there are people who know the promised Messiah. The government of Philippines would previously not allow us to send a missionary, but in recent days, births have started occurring. Only 3 or 4 days have passed when a person wrote a letter to me from Philippines, where he said that consider this my letter of pledging allegiance. Hazur says this is the time of Hadhrat Muslimot. So he continues, wherever I learn that there is someone to serve Islam, I immediately write a letter. So thus he has written, but he also wrote a letter to Anjuman Ishaat-e-Islam Lahore. I also wrote a letter to the London Mosque address, and also to the addresses in Washington, USA. Now look, no missionary went to Philippines, but people are automatically becoming inclined to Ahmadiyyat. This is that same cricket ball which the promised Messiah alayhi salam hit from Qadian and is now reaching to the ends of the world. This has now become so profuse and widespread that one is astonished at how Allah the Almighty is automatically introducing the promised Messiah into the world. I have often related the accounts of people in this respect in how the promised Messiah alayhi salam is himself introducing people. When sometimes see the picture of the promised Messiah alayhi salam after a time, they recognize him, or similarly with the photos of the Khulafa. They come to learn that that was the same person who was imparting to them the correct message of Islam. Relating an incident and account, Hadhrat Musleh Maud said, without making hard efforts and toiling in both religious and worldly matters, one cannot achieve anything. The promised Messiah, on whom be peace, would say that in our era, all respect and honor has been associated with us by God. That is to say that in the era of the promised Messiah alayhi salam, all honor and dignity is linked to the promised Messiah. All honorable people will either be followers of ours or will be our opponents. In other words, even if the opponents attain honor, it will be by virtue of the promised Messiah. So the promised Messiah, on whom be peace, would say that look at Maulvi Sunawala Sahib. He is no major Maulvi. There are thousands of such clerics in India and Punjab. His only claim to honor is due to opposing us. Whether they admit this or not, this is the reality, that today there is honor in either following us or opposing us, because the true central focus and object is us. If opponents attain any honor, it is due to us. Expanding on this further, the promised Messiah alayhi salam has explained this by saying, one cannot attain reward and blessing until he attains excellence. Entering into or having an interest in religion would only give benefit through excellences. The promised Messiah alayhi salam says only those benefit from us who have a strong connection with us, who are either those who oppose us fully, such as Maulvi Sunawallah Sahib and others, because no one cares about these smaller clerics. On the other side are the people who have full sincerity and devotion. Now, minor clerics have made opposition to the promised Messiah a means to earn a living. If they attain any respect and honor, or daily bread to eat, it is only because of this. A weak bond or connection gives no benefit. In reality, excellences result in blessings. Without this, a person remains deprived from blessings and graces. If a person says that come what may, I have devoted and thrown everything in the way of God, that let whatever happen to happen, we have set sail in the sea to that direction. If one walks towards God with this mentality, then he will be treated like the earlier ones. Ultimately, Allah is not an enemy to anyone. It is necessary for a person to wholly and absolutely submit himself to God and fall upon his threshold. Through this, he will attain everything, the progress and success which will become necessitated for him to receive will be automatically attained. Thus, every Ahmadi should be mindful of this. When they have believed, they should submit to God wholly. Feel the body parts of one who sits near fire, they will all be warm. While you touch him on his face, arm or feet, it will feel hot. So thus, how can a person leave everything and come near to God, sit before him, yet God's existence is not visible from him? When metal is placed in fire, it begins to display some of the elements of the fire, although it is not fire. Thus, those who have a close relationship with God are treated exceptionally. Allah the Almighty places the cloak of kun fayakun upon them, that they say something and it happens. And foolish people even begin to consider them as God, whereas all they do is display the reflection of God. So if one wants to derive benefit from religion, the manner and the way is that wholly and absolutely devote yourself and submission to God. If the entire body of people or the whole nation acts in this way, they will be specially blessed and will attain success and victory in every field. It is necessary for our Jamaat to also take this step. Many people believe it is enough just to assert something, whereas one should love Allah the Almighty in such a way that it becomes something natural, rather than being simply a false claim or assertion, because falsehood and God's love cannot combine in one place. Falsehood is a darkness, and the love of God is light. So how can light and darkness join together? Thus, we should constantly assess our own selves. I often draw attention to this, that after coming into the bed, the oath of allegiance of the promised Messiah, we should appear distinct compared to others. In our belief and conviction of the existence and being of Allah the Almighty, we should appear distinguished from others and should have a greater belief. In our worship, we should appear distinct from others. In our efforts to establish the highest standards, we should be making greater efforts as compared to anyone else. We should also attain a distinctive status in displaying the highest moral standards. In abiding by the law, we should be exemplary. In short, in every single aspect, an Ahmadi needs to be distinct and distinguished from others. It is only then that, as the promised Messiah alayhi salam has said, can we properly avail and benefit from the bayt, the oath of allegiance. Hadhrat Musleh Maud relates an account relating to kindness and compassion to others. Once a government official came to meet the promised Messiah alayhi salam about an issue. He said that the non-Ahmadis or the Hindus of Qadian would sometimes complain about the promised Messiah alayhi salatu wa salam about wrong information. So once the official came to Qadian and said, "These people are your citizens, thus treat them kindly and gently." The promised Messiah, on whom be peace, responded, "Go and ask Buddha Shah." Hazrat says Buddha Shah was a person who lived there. So the promised Messiah said, "Ask Buddha Shah, that was there even one occasion where he refrained from trying to inflict the greatest amount of harm and damage as possible to me? And then ask him again, that have I ever let an opportunity to go to waste? Were I ever desisted from treating him kindly and compassionately, without exception?" So the official kept his head stooped down, remaining silent. This was a glorious example of the promised Messiah alayhi salam's morals. So thus our Jamaat should also be role models in their morals. Your matters and dealings should be so wholesome, pure, and straightforward that even if you are empty-handed and have nothing to live on, you do not take from an amount that has been entrusted to you. You should speak so gently and kindly and lovingly that it has a positive impact upon others. Explaining that one who becomes used to something no longer is inconvenienced or pained by it. Hazrat Musleh Maud, may Allah be pleased with him, says, I have heard the promised Messiah alayhi salam speak on this subject with my very own ears when he said that Allah the Almighty places two types of trials. One is the type of trials where a person has a choice, where he has the option to alleviate the situation or make it easier. The promised Messiah alayhi salam would use as an example that wuzu, ablution, is also a trial. In the winter, when it is freezing and the cold wind is blowing, just the gust of cold wind causes one pain. People will not be able to envisage this here, for in the bathrooms there is heating and there is hot water. But imagine there is no heating, there is cold water, and when one has to go about, you can then envisage doing ablution in the winter. Hadrat Musleh Maud says that a person is commanded by God to perform the wudu, the ablution, before offering their prayers. Sometimes at the prayer time, hot water may not be available, or at times he may have availability of hot water, but it may not be prepared at the time of prayer, whereas at times he may not even have hot water and only freezing water, and thus he would have to perform the ablution using this water and offer the prayer. The promised Messiah would say that this is also an ablution that God has placed for the believers, but he would say that this is a trial in which a person has an option. That is, he is permitted that if the water is cold, he may heat it. So as such, this is an optional trial. Many other examples can be given of optional trials. Allah the Almighty has ordained this, but has given him permission that if you are unable to perform the ablution with cold water, then you should heat the water. If you do not have the facility in your home, you should try to find it from your neighbors. After doing the ablution with hot water, wear proper warm clothes so you do not feel cold. People sometimes build water heaters in the mosques. As a result, the water stays warm in it. Thus, poor people who cannot warm water at home should go to the mosques and perform the ablution through the water heaters. In the underdeveloped or less developing countries, can properly envisage and understand this. As well as, in fact, the elders among you here, those who were born here would perhaps not be able to imagine this, because hot water is readily available here. Nonetheless, many of us are aware of this state of affairs in Pakistan, India, and in other places. Then he says that if there is no facility for a water heater, one can extract water in a bucket from a well and perform the ablution. He would also be able to avoid the cold, because in the winter, water from the well is comparatively warmer. So thus, if he has no other means, he is able to alleviate his discomfort in this manner. Similarly, he would say that Allah the Almighty ordains that if he wakes up in the morning and carries out the Fajr prayer, then normally to wake up for the Fajr in the morning in the winter is very difficult and burdensome. But if one has ample facilities and provisions, he would not feel discomforted and troubled. For example, if he is in the habit of performing the Tahajjud prayers, what he can do is that at the time of offering the prayers, he should make sure the doors are properly closed so it remains warm and the cold gust of wind outside cannot enter. Similarly, when he goes to perform the Fajr at the mosque, then he can cover himself with a blanket or a light quilt if he does not have a coat, or a warm coat. Even one who is poor, he can wear an old waistcoat or coat, and thus he can save himself from the elements of the cold. If one is entirely impoverished, he has no blanket, quilt, coat or otherwise, he will not be inflicted with much pain, because he is used to such cold. It is the law of God that one who becomes used to something is not discomforted by it. I have witnessed many a people in Pakistan, including in the winter, that whilst we wear warm clothes, the poor person is wearing minimal warm clothing and without socks is easily walking around and does not feel the cold. And the reason for this is because he has become used to it. Hazrat Musleh Maud, may Allah be pleased with him, says that, for example, women sometimes when cooking over a live fire where there is wood and coal burning, they sometimes are able to remove the coal or embers with their own hands and feel no pain, whereas we would not be able to even go near to that live fire. So thus, when one becomes used to something, he does not feel any pain. So the first thing is, if one has to pass through a trial, having to endure pain and suffering, then he should bear it for the sake of Allah the Almighty. If there is some solution to alleviate the hardship, then he can do so. He should act upon the command and enjoyments of God. If this is not possible, one should become used to it and act in accordance with that. Once it becomes a habit, it will no longer be a pain or suffering. Hadhrat Musleh Maud does not mention the second part in terms of the second trial, but there is an extract of the Promised Messiah which I should read out, in which he explains the wisdom of trials and tribulations. The Promised Messiah says, "Look, Allah was all-powerful to prevent any kind of pain, affliction or distress to reach any person, and to enable them to only go through a life of pleasure and luxury, that they lead a regal life, and only provide them with comfort and enjoyments. However, God the Almighty did not make this so. There are immense secrets and mysteries in this. Observe how dearly parents consider their daughters. Often they are more dear to them than their sons. But finally a time arrives when parents have to separate the daughter from them. It requires one to have huge resolve, fortitude and courage. From both sides it is a very miserable and sorrowful state. That is, at a time when the bride is being seen off, both she and the parents weep. After living for 14 or 15 years, finally the time comes for their separation, a time of great melancholy. It would be apt for a foolish person to call this an unkind occasion. However, there are some faculties latent within the girl which are only manifested when she enters into relationship with the husband and when she lives amongst the in-laws. This proves to be a blessing and fortune for both sides and parties concerned. This is the same state of the people of God. There are some concealed faculties within them which are impossible to manifest unless they pass through hardships and difficulties. Look, we who relate the morals of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and mention it proudly and boldly, it is only because the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam endured both periods. If this was not the case, how could we present this preeminence? That is to say, he had to pass through both periods of difficulty and ease. Do not look with contempt at times of difficulty, for it attracts God's pleasure and nearness. To attain this taste of delight, which is received by the accepted and chosen ones of God, all inferior, base, and worldly desires have to be severed. To become the chosen ones of God, one has to endure through hardships and difficulties and be grateful. Every day should accept a new type of death upon himself. When a person accepts a complete death from worldly desires, greed, and avarice, he is then granted that life, which is everlasting, and he never dies thereafter. Thus, this is a brief sketch of the wisdom of passing through trials. Hadhrat Musleh Maud said that when I was 9 or 10 years old, another student and I were playing in their home. There was a book in the cupboard upon which there was a blue book cover, which was from the time of our grandfather. We were starting to read new fields of knowledge. When I opened the book, it was written that now Gabriel does not descend. I said that this is wrong, for Gabriel still descends on my father. The other boy said, no, Gabriel does not descend. It is written in this book. So we started a debate. Finally, we went to the Promised Messiah, on whom be peace. We both presented our viewpoints. The Promised Messiah said, what is written in the book is wrong. Gabriel still descends today. Hadhrat Musleh Maud relates an incident, saying that I remember an account of silliness. I have recalled this account many a times and laughed, and sometimes I weep when I reminisce about it. However, I also greatly respect and honor it. Among the accounts of my life I am envious and proud of includes one of folly. It goes as follows. One night in the era of the Promised Messiah, we were sleeping in the courtyard. It was the summer. Clouds started to gather in the sky. Thunder roared loudly. During this time, near to Qadian, there was lightning. Its thunder was so ferocious that every household in Qadian thought that the lightning had if struck inside their homes. As a result of this thunder and the gathering of the clouds, all people went into the room. At this time, those of us sleeping in the courtyard woke up and went inside. I still remember the scene. When the promised Messiah was going inside, I put both my hands on the head of the promised Messiah, alayhi salam, thinking that if lightning struck, it should hit me and not him. Later, when I came to my senses, I laughed at what I had done. For it is we who will be saved from lightning from the promised Messiah, rather than the promised Messiah being safeguarded through us. Hadhrat Musleh Maud relates the account of the demise of Hadhrat Maulvi Abdul Karim. In 1905, Hadhrat Maulvi Abdul Karim Sahib fell ill. I was 17 years old. It was an age of having fun and playing. Maulvi Sahib was ill. We would spend our entire day playing. One day, I took a type of broth to Maulvi Sahib. I do not remember ever inquiring about his well-being any other time. I would believe at the time that Maulvi Sahib cannot even pass away, for he would pass away after the promised Messiah. Maulvi Abdul Karim Sahib had a temper. I took a few lessons of Arabian Nights from him and then that was it. This was the limit of my relationship with him. Certainly, there were debates that occurred during this time as to who the angel on the right and the left of the promised Messiah were. Some would say that Maulvi Abdul Karim was the right angel and some would say that Mukarram Khalifa Awwal was the angel on the right. We did not have the fortitude at the time to compare knowledge and tasks. It was an age of childishness and did not have mature thought. Thus I believe that it was as a result of the love and affection that Khalifa Awwal had towards me that I favoured the Nuruddin side. Once we inquired from the promised Messiah and he corroborated our viewpoint. That is to say that Hadhrat Khalif Tamsi I was closer to the promised Messiah. In short, I had no more relationship with Hadhrat Maulvi Abdul Karim Sahib, except that I held to acclaim his passionate addresses, and I was a follower of his love and affection and devotion of the promised Messiah. However, as soon as I heard about the demise of Hadhrat Maulvi Abdul Karim, my state transformed altogether. It was like a call of lightning which struck through my body when I heard of his death. I lost all capacity of endurance and tolerance. I rushed to my room and closed all doors. I fell upon the bed like a lifeless body. Tears flowed from my eyes. They were not tears, rather a river of weeping. Life is transitory. I would see before my eyes the love of Hazrat Maulvi Abdul Karim of the promised Messiah and his services to him. I would constantly think in my heart that he was a great helper to the promised Messiah's mission and the promised Messiah must be greatly pained. Then my thoughts would be covered and a river of tears would flow down my eyes. That day I could neither eat, nor would my tears subside. Seeing my grief-stricken state, the promised Messiah, alayhi salam, was also astonished. He said, surprised, "What has happened to Mahmud? He did not have such a relationship with Maulvi Sahib. He will fall ill." Then Hadhrat Musleh Maud mentions, relating to 1908, that it was not just a new era in my life, but the lives of all Ahmadis. It was a year when a person departed from us who was like the soul of our lifeless bodies, who was like the sight of our sightless eyes, and was like the light of our dark hearts. It was not a mere separation. It was like doomsday. The ground was pulled from under our feet, and the heavens move from the position. Allah the Exalted is witness that at the time I had no concern about food or clothing. My sole concern was that even if the entire world left the promised Messiah, I would not leave him. I would establish this movement in the world. I am unaware to what extent I have fulfilled this pledge, but I have always intended that my task to be in accordance with this pledge. With the grace of the Almighty Allah, every single member of the Jamaat and even those who have come after, that Hadhrat Musleh Maud thoroughly fulfilled this pledge. In fact, he even guided us to the right ways of discharging our pledges. May Allah the Almighty enable us to fulfill our covenants and pledges. At this time, I will lead two funeral prayers. One is where the body is present. Has it arrived? The funeral which is here is of Suraiya Begum Sahiba, wife of Chaudhary Abdul Rahim Sahib, the late of Multan. She was in Manchester, UK. She passed away on 11th November, at the age of 77. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. She was very pious, sincere, regular in prayers, patient and grateful. She was a Musia. She leaves behind 6 sons and 4 daughters. One son, Abdul Mateen Sahib, is Zaim Ansarullah of Manchester. The daughter is being unable to serve as Sadr Lajna, Manchester. I will lead her funeral prayer. May Allah the Almighty elevate her rank and enable for her children to remain steadfast upon her pious ways. The second is a funeral prayer in absentia of Mahmoud Abdullah Shabuti Sahib of Yemen. Shabuti Sahib passed away on 9th November 2014 after a long illness. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. His father sent him to Jamia Ahmadiyya Rabwa for education. He passed the Maulvi Fazil examination. After Ghulam Ahmed Sahib, a missionary, he was appointed in Yemen. In Yemen, on 24th May 1934, he was born. His father, Abdullah Muhammad Usman Shabuti Sahib, was the first Yemeni Ahmadi. He did the bed through Ghulam Ahmed Sahib, the missionary. The father of the late deceased sent him in 52 to study in Jami Ahmadiyya Rabba, where he passed his Maulvi Fazil examination. He was the first foreigner to pass this Maulvi Fazil exam. He also passed the Shahid exam from Jamia. In 1960, he became a missionary and returned to Yemen. But before he returned, his father counseled him to marry in Rabwa and then come back. Tariq-e-Shadid Sahib then arranged for his rishta with the daughter of Sayyid Bashir Machad Sahib with Sahib Zadan Mohtaraman Aslim Shah Sahib. Who is from the family of Dr. Abdul Sattar Sahib. This is the in-law of Shabuti Sahib. The son of the deceased writes that all the students of Jamia would relate that he would offer his Fajr in Masjid Mahmood in Tariq-e-Shadid quarters. Shabuti Sahib would go to Masjid Mubarak to offer his prayer, because he would go for a walk with Sahibzada Mirza Bashir Ahmed Sahib. Usman Chini Sahib, Waham Adam Sahib are all among his classmates from Jamia. In the 70s, he worked in Yemen as a missionary. But when the Yemeni government separated from the British government, the Communist Party came into Yemen, who put restrictions upon all religious activities and preaching, and thus he was advised by the Jamaat to stop all Jamaat activities. He was looking after the administrative and financial matters of the Jamaat. Juma and both Eids he would lead in Eden University. The mosque there was owned by an Ahmadi. After his demise, the families demanded for it to be returned to them. So the mosque was given back to the family who were not Ahmadi, and Shabuti Sahib then presented his house as a mosque. The prayers would then be offered there. He would never take any expenditure from the Jamaat. He would fulfill all the expenditure from his own pocket. He would not take anything from the Jamaat budget. He would send all the contribution to the center. In fact, when the early missionaries were allotted a plot in Rabwa, the late Shabuti Sahib, he also returned his plot to the Jamaat. as I said regarding Wahab Adam Sahib, that he also gave it back to the Jamaat. The deceased had instilled the love of Khilafat from amongst his children. He was a greatly devoted person to Khilafat. He came here once and met me. He was very kind to all his relatives, whether Ahmadi or non-Ahmadi, and would regularly meet them and keep a contact with them. He leaves behind, apart from Sayyida Naseem Shah Sahiba, 5 sons and 12 grandchildren. One of his sons is in Canada, Nasser Ahmed Sahib is here in the UK. May Allah the Almighty elevate the rank of the deceased. May Allah the Almighty also enable for his children to follow in his footsteps.
Alhamdulillah, nahmadu wa nasta'inu wa nastaghfiruhu wa nu'minu bihi wa natawakkalu alayhi. ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله ونشهد أن محمدًا عبده ورسوله عباد الله رحمكم الله إن الله يأمر بالعدل واللسان وإيتاء ذي القربى وينهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر والبغي يعظكم لعلكم تذكرون اذكروا الله يذكركم وادعوه يستجب لكم ولذكر الله